Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the City of Angels, home of the Chargers at 5-2. Did I see a football game where a team missed field goals, dropped passes, and found a way to lose, and it wasn't the Chargers? I saw that yesterday, right? Yeah, that was weird. Did I see Justin Tucker missed an extra point? I saw that. That was weird. And if you were in a coma a couple years ago and you woke up and you said, hey, you know who's the most dynamic offensive team in the league, the Rams? You'd be like, get the freak out of here. And nope. That's exactly what's taking place. Kansas City looked dominant last night as primetime Andy Dalton was every bit as bad as primetime Andy Dalton has ever been thought to be. Gosh, we got a lot to get to. If you like baseball, if you don't like baseball, I'm going to put this out there on Twitter. The Chris Taylor catch against the Brewers might be the best catch and the biggest catch I've seen in baseball in a long, long time. Like, I got to go back and look at that Willie Mays catch and try and get a sense of which catch was actually bigger. But we got a World Series between the Dodgers and the Red Sox starting at Fenway. If there is a sports god, because I don't believe that God cares about sports. Please don't give thanks. In my mind, like, you didn't win because of God. Not like God's like, yeah, I want this guy. No, you, uh-uh. But if there's a sports god, or if God has a little sports, Game 7 would be on Halloween night at Fenway Park. Tell me there's something better than Game 7, Fenway Park. Okay, I'll top it, Halloween night. Maybe Kershaw trying to close things out. Walker Buehler getting the start. Gets Craig Kimbrell, who he was tipping pitches. That's why he's been getting jacked so much. All right, let's get to what I think is the story of the day. There are a lot of people talking about the conservative actions of Jason Garrett. There are people talking about the really strange penalty against the Dallas Cowboys where the Redskins jumped, but they were allegedly drawn offsides by a center moving, the long snapper moving the football. If you know anything about the NFL or even college football, you know there's a gray area there. There's the uncalled, you never move it because the long snapper gets a chance to kind of re-grip and reload the football so that the snap is perfect. It happens on every team, and for some bizarre reason, the Cowboys got called for it, and then they miss a field goal. Here's Jason Garrett first on his kicker. Okay? Sorry, I thought we had Jason Garrett on his kicker. So, look, I don't care what anybody says. I care what people do. I care what people do. This goes back to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They didn't believe in Blake Bortles last year in the AFC Championship game, no matter how much they said they believed in Blake Bortles, because they got the ball back with a lead 59 seconds to go, plenty of time to get down in at least field goal range against a very malleable defense in the New England Patriots, and they chose to take a knee. Not what you say, it's what you do. You were told that since you were a kid. I'm sure you've been told that by your significant other. It's actions, not words, right? Actions, not words. Don't tell me you love me. Show me you love me. And for the Dallas Cowboys, how many more times do we need to see Jason Garrett go the conservative route until we understand that he just doesn't think he has one of those quarterbacks that can figure it out and can make it happen? That the risk is far too great than the reward. Whether it's taking a sack or not being accurate or losing the football or just making the wrong decision and appearing lost, Dak Prescott, though he did make an incredible run to score a touchdown on the previous drive for the Dallas Cowboys, getting conservative and settling for a field goal, much like getting conservative and playing to your defense in Houston the week before or 2 weeks before, it tells you in actions, not in words, that Jason Garrett, a former quarterback in the National Football League and a guy who's been a head coach for a long time, just thinks, hey, he's fine. He's okay. But you know what? He's not worthy of my trust in that big of a situation. The Dallas Cowboys can tell you time and again, hey, Dak's our guy. We're building around Dak. And we just got to create a situation, scenario for Dak to be successful. But they're showing you, based upon their actions, not their words, that he's good to a point. It doesn't mean they think he stinks. He's not punt on third down and play to your defense, you know, water boy type of offense. But it just shows you in key situations when it's a 50-50 call, do you go for it in overtime? Do you go for it when you get the ball and a chance to maybe score a touchdown and win the game or play for a makeable field goal? Jason Garrett, some by nature of his experience in the business, but a good portion of it has to be based upon his faith or lack thereof in Dak Prescott, and nothing Dak Prescott's done has really built any faith. There's no one can sit there and go, oh, no, Gottlieb, you don't know. He's got laser-like precision. Like, no, he doesn't. And so the Cowboys have other – I'm not saying he's their only issue. Right? They have other issues. You know, it started with Travis Frederick coming down with this, you know, bizarre autoimmune disease. Their need to shed Dez Bryant and then the sudden loss of Jason Witten, who has just crushed it in the Monday Night Football booth. So they're left without the weaponry that a guy or any guy really needs. Like, all of those are legitimate issues. But when you're not willing to give it to your quarterback to figure it out, time in, time out, coming off of what was one of his best performances as a pro in a 40-7 win the week before, tells you all you need to know. Don't tell me you love me. Show me you love me. Don't tell me you change. Show me you change. Don't tell me, Dak Prescott's awesome. He's going to be here forever. He's a franchise quarterback. Look, Jerry Jones knew 2 years ago. Actually, he knew 3 years ago. He knew that Tony Romo was the better option. Go back and look. Jerry Jones wanted to play Tony Romo. Everybody's like, well, you know, you can't mess with a hot streak. And, you know, he's just been good. And Romo's been banged up. And my argument then is my argument now. Tony Romo's a better quarterback. Everyone knew Tony Romo's a better quarterback. Everyone. Now, whether or not Tony Romo would be healthy or Tony Romo made too much money, all of these are legit issues. But to win one game in the playoffs, Tony Romo was better. Even go back and look when Tony Romo played in week 17 of that season. And you're like, wow, he made way more plays because he's just better at throwing a football with far more precision. Dez Bryant was better. Jason Witten was better. The Dallas Cowboys were better offensively because he's better. And since then, what's happened? What's happened? When it was thrust all on his shoulders last year, he couldn't carry the team. And even this year, in key situations, week after week, when it gets tight, Jason Garrett's like, We're okay. And oh yeah, by the way, this whole Twitter sphere, I like Twitter. You'll see me tweet out things like my winner last night about how glorious it's going to be when the Kansas City Chiefs lose at home in the playoffs. Look, this is a fun team. They're dominating fools, but it's the Kansas City Chiefs. No matter how great a place Arrowhead seems to be, they always seem to lose. Last five times, they lost at home in the playoffs. It just feels like we know how this movie ends. We just don't know how we get to that point. We get some breaking news? Oh, let's get some breaking news from Dan Byer.
Breaking news from Fox Sports.
Well, Doug, the Dallas Cowboys are in the news. Amari Cooper going to be traded by the Raiders to Dallas, according to reports from ESPN. Jacina Anderson, the first to have it. Adam Schefter's got it as well. And Jason Lockenforis is a deal will be done as well. Of course, Jason, our friend here from CBS Sports. But Amari Cooper going to be traded by the Raiders to the Dallas Cowboys. The compensation in return at this point is not known.
Supposedly a first-round pick, right?
What's that?
Well, they wanted a first-round pick.
Yes, they wanted a first-round pick. Whether they got it or not, who knows?
Yeah, and remember, here's the Amari Cooper thing, okay? So drafted by the previous regime, disappointing year last year, only making $700 in terms of base, but he does make a bunch in bonuses. Next year, because they picked up his fifth-year option, he makes like $13 million next year. So the Raiders are, here's what the Raiders are doing. They're not Chapter 11. They're Chapter 7. They're reorganizing. They're reorganizing. And it's really, really smart. This is what companies do. When a guy walks into his company, he's like, man, this thing is a mess. Right? They spend the first 6 months trying to figure out who's worth keeping and who's worth getting. Then they figure out who makes the most money, and they get rid of all those people that they don't think are worth what they're being paid, and they completely reorganize. Look at Fortune 500 company after Fortune 500 company. You got to change and you got to evolve in the business world, and that's what the Raiders are doing. Didn't say you had to like it. Didn't say you had to think that Gruden is going to make the right picks. He didn't draft well. He took a lot of chances last year, but the Raiders haven't really been good since he left. And I think he's looked and knows that and knows that he's got a long-term contract and he wants to be sustainable for the long term, which is, by the way, what most businesses do. Let's not try and make a little bit of money this year or a lot of money this year. Let's try and make money and continue to grow year after year after year after year.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
TV was there. Everyone was there watching. They thumped Ohio State this past weekend. And after dominating then number two Ohio State, which Brom's kind enough to spend some time with us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Coach, how are you?
Very good. Good afternoon.
Okay, so heading into the game, what were your thoughts on what would it take for your Boilers to be successful?
Well, that's a good question. I felt that, you know what, we started off bad, did some things that were not working and a lot of problems that we need to fix. But I thought we had been making some strides and showcasing it on the field. And, you know, this was one of those games where I thought we actually – I had a chance to win if we did everything right, if we made plays, if we were aggressive, if they had an off day, all those things had to calculate into it. And, you know, I told our team the night before the game, hey, you know, I've been here a year and a half with you, and even last year when we had a productive year, I don't think we were ready for this game. Up until this week, I don't think we were ready, but I do think we're ready for this game. I think you guys have put in the work, and I think we can have a chance to win this game if we do everything right, play as hard as we can, give great effort for 60 minutes. And fortunately for us, we were aggressive. We made some plays. They didn't probably make as many as they wanted, and we gained some momentum, and things just all calculated and added up, and it helped us come out with a big, big win.
One of the things that you've changed is the quarterback position. How hard is that as a former quarterback yourself? Like, I always think as a point guard, like, you don't want to be pulling guys because – you know you have to have leadership in the locker room, and the only way to have true leadership is if the guys in the locker room know you have the quarterback's back. What's this process of finding the right guy to lead your offense been like for you?
Well, I think we've found the right guy, and David Blau's done a tremendous job. You know, being a former player and a coach, I think I kind of get it a little bit that you got to have great players, but you got to have great coaching. I don't think I have been doing a great job of putting David in the best position to succeed, especially the first 3 weeks of the season. And it really wasn't until we played Missouri and I said, you know what, we're gonna air this thing out. We're going to take some chances. I'm going to ask you to throw it vertically. I'm going to ask you to take shots, and we need to hit some. If we don't, you got to check it down, not throw picks, interceptions for me. And he rose up to the occasion and got it done, and we threw for a record-breaking amount of yards. And even though we lost the game, we kind of took off from there. And he's played exceptional, but I think it's because I've given him more opportunities to make plays. I've been much more aggressive in my play calling, and he's responded. So he's been a great leader just because he's been that way, whether he was a starter or not. And he had an opportunity to leave this year as a fifth-year senior transfer, not knowing if he was going to start, and he stayed. So it showed his pride that he has in this school, and I think the team understands that he's here to win regardless of whether it's him or not, that he's definitely stepped forward and been lights out lately.
49-20 was the final score. Purdue takes down Ohio State. It was an absolute no-doubter. and their head coach, Jeff Brohm, kind of to spend some time with us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. When did you become aware of Tyler Trent, the cancer patient who's become such a nationally inspirational story?
Well, it is a great story. Really, about midway through the year last year, before the Michigan game, as I was walking from my office down to, I think, the training table meal, he was camping out the night before to get in the game first, and met him there, and we talked. I really didn't know his whole situation, but he just had a great energy about him, a great smile, a lot of pride in the program, and then we just kind of got to know each other a little bit. He came to our bowl game. I realized his story from someone else. He was able to overcome it. He went to a lot of basketball games, went to their tournaments, saw him a little bit, was very involved on campus. And then this thing kind of came back on him very rapidly and fast, and I didn't really know how bad it was. And we tried to just support him from afar, but it wasn't until, I think, the Nebraska game where I realized and heard that things had taken a turn for the worse. We found a way to go there and win at Nebraska. It was a big win for us, for our program. And even after that, on the plane ride home, I saw some pictures and heard some even things that were a little more alarming, that it didn't look great. So we decided to, I decided to have our team captains take the game ball to them. And really from there, it took off. They went down there, had a great time with him as far as being around him, giving him hope, letting him know he's our team captain. They prayed together. And then from there, I went down and saw him a few days later, and then it kind of just took off from there. And, I think the spirit that he's shown, and the fact that now not only the Purdue football team and our program and our university, but now people across the country know his story, has been an inspiration to him as well. And I think he's gained strength from it, and I think hopefully it'll help him keep on longer. I know he was at our game, believe it or not, and he looked actually great for a guy in his condition, a tremendous smile. In great spirits, and we're hopeful for the best.
Yeah. What's that like, though? You know, when you're a head coach in college, and, of course, you've been assistant coach all over after a stellar playing career, and I think the college experience is a lot different than how some of my cohorts in the media like to say that it is, right? You learn so much more about people from different cultures, but also a story like this, which I think gives those kids such perspective, right, that they didn't you don't have when you're a player. All you're thinking about is winning the game and going out and having a good time. And maybe, you know, a lot of them are thinking about the chances to play beyond college. What's it like for this story to provide perspective for everyone involved?
Well, you're exactly right. And the great thing about Purdue is, we're not a football program in the limelight right now. Before this game, I think we have a bunch of guys that do things for the right reason. We try to make the game fun and for our players to play in and for fans to watch. This is a tremendous university where a lot of people have accomplished a lot. And to find a guy like this who's given us inspiration, and for us to kind of take him in and for him to respond in the way he has, while it's important to win football games, we all try to give him more hope and through our love and support of him is really something that means a lot. And I know when our players went down to visit him at his house, when they came back, they said it meant more to them than it even did to him, and they got a lot out of it. And all those things matter. It gives you an understanding that there are a lot of why you want to win a game, a person's life and how he lives it means even more.
How do you get your team back up to that magic level after the emotion of Tyler being in the locker room, but the emotion of beating Ohio State, all the attaboys? Now you go to Michigan State, and they just got stomped by Michigan, but that's a really well-coached program with a ton of pride and history. How do you get your team back up to that magic level?
Well, it is going to be a challenge. You know, the thing we got going for us is two things. One, while we beat Ohio State the way we did, it wasn't but a few weeks earlier we lost to Eastern Michigan at home. So, this team understands that if we don't come ready to play, we can lose to anybody, especially a good team in the Big Ten. Secondly, I think our guys watched last year where Iowa – beat Ohio State very handily at home, and 2 weeks later at their home field, a team called Purdue came in at 4-6 and found a way to beat them. So on any given day, anything can happen. Hopefully our players understand that. Yes, it will be a challenge to make sure we understand it, but this is a good football team. You know, we've got to come ready to play every game and play well in order to win, and for us, Michigan State will be a huge test.
You know that these questions are coming, so I don't think it's unfair to ask. But I guess the way in which I would ask it is, what is the ceiling at Purdue, right? Like, Joe Tiller had it rolling, but, you know, he also had it rolling when he had, you know, pros at quarterback, and the league was still kind of run-oriented, hadn't yet evolved. Obviously, you know, your offense is dynamic, but the thought is, you know, whether it was Tennessee calling last year or other schools calling this year, the question becomes, like, you know, Purdue seems to have a ceiling that's lower than Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan and maybe Nebraska or Wisconsin ultimately. What's your feelings about the legitimate ceiling at Purdue?
Well, I get it. You know, the great thing, I think, one of the reasons I came to Purdue when I was at the last place and this opportunity came about, you know, basically 90% of the people I asked about taking the job said, no, you don't need to take this. You need to wait for something better and bigger. And the more I thought about it is, you know, in my opinion, I like the challenge at Purdue. I like the fact that we have a ton of room to improve. I like the fact that we do have a lot of room to grow. And I like the fact that a lot of people don't think it can happen here. So that's something that I think drives me every day when I come into work. The people here have been great to me. They've been very supportive. We've made strides. Like you said, we have added lights. That's a plus. We've got a brand new facility. We've had great fan support. And it can happen. And while it won't happen overnight, I do think the challenge of getting this program up in the mix in the Big Ten and making strides and getting better each and every year and getting better recruits and getting better on the football field is a challenge that I'm looking forward to. And to me, the sky's the limit, and we've just got to make it happen. And will it happen overnight? No, but I do think we can make strides and be a competitor.
Yeah, Blau was great, but so was DJ Knox and Rondell Moore. I mean, a lot to be proud of. Well, listen, Coach, I know there's a ton of work in getting guys back, especially with Michigan State calling. We appreciate you joining us. Congratulations on turning this thing around. As you point, I mean, people have followed it 0-3 to start. People are like, wow, that's kind of disappointing. But you turned this thing around. Now you got a chance to get to the Big Ten, legit chance to get the Big Ten championship game. We'll let you get back to work, and we appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, it's Jeff Brom, who's the head coach at Purdue.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Couldn't be a better guy to have on right now than Michael Lombardi. Literally. Worked with Gruden. Last time the Raiders were good, he was there. Simple, right? Michael Lombardi is a former general manager of the National Football League. His new book, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. It's on sale now. Michael, thanks so much for taking time and joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I likened it to corporate restructuring, like Chapter 7. You know, get rid of all the entitlements. The Chapter 11 is rearranging? Did I get it? Did I screw it up?
It's filed for Chapter 11 is what I think it is. Yeah, although I'm not a businessman.
Man, I screwed the whole thing up, the whole analogy. Well, let me start again. Hey, welcome in. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Michael, I'd like to like it thinking it's like Chapter 11. Right, Chapter 11, where you corporate restructuring, get rid of entitlements, start fresh, understand what you want for the future, and have a long and kind of sustainable business plan. Is that what they're doing?
I think so. I mean, you know, I think they made that decision with Mac. They weren't going to pay the money. And, you know, I was always concerned because I know John values receivers so highly that perhaps he was going to cave in and give in to the demands of Cooper. And I think once he got more familiar with Cooper, I think that he decided it was, you know, to get a first-round pick for a guy. No one else in the league was offering that. The Cowboys did. I, you know, you're a basketball guy. If I were Dallas, I would have lottery protected that pick because I'd be concerned about the Cowboys not having the greatest year and that pick being a high one.
Yeah. What about the Cowboys? Does this show desperation? I know how they're going to paint it. They're going to say, hey, look, first-round pick, we would have taken a wide receiver anyway, and this guy's better than anybody who's out there. But he's going to make, you know, until his deal's restructured, $13 million next year, which is far more they'd have to pay for a rookie. You do get him this year, like, you know, $400,000 prorated. How much does that change and help Dak Prescott's struggling passing game?
Well, look, they definitely need help on the outside. I mean, Gallup is playing well. I think he's a kid that has showed that he's got some ability, but I think they definitely, Allen Hurns hasn't really come through for them like they thought, probably coming off the injury. you know, so he hasn't quite gotten there yet. I don't know if Amari Cooper's a number one receiver. That's the question you have to ask yourself. You know, you're going to pay $13 million. You hope you're getting a number one. I mean, the Chiefs paid $16 million for Sammy Watkins, and he's not a number one receiver. I think they did that knowingly. It's going to cost them when Tyreek Hill's contract has to come up, and you've got to pay him as well. So, you know, Sammy won't be there. Look, I think the Cowboys are desperate. Their offense struggles. I don't think it's just about players. I think it's about scheme, and then I think it's about clock management. I mean, yesterday against the Redskins, they've got the ball, you know, with a minute two to go, one timeout, and all they need is a field goal to win the game. And, you know, they take three plays. They're on the Dallas 46-yard line, on the Redskins 46-yard line, and the next thing you know, they only run two more plays before they have to kick the field goal.
Yeah, I that one, though, strikes me a little bit as, hey, we don't want to put too much on Dak because we still don't trust him. Is that fair?
I think that's really, you know, I mean, how can't you trust a guy that's played as well as he has? I think he takes too much heat for not playing well. I think there's a scheme issue there. I definitely think the offensive line isn't playing to the level that everybody thinks it could. Frederick being out obviously hurts them. Connor Williams, the left guard, has not played. You know, eventually he's going to be a good player, but he got called for a bad holding call right before the turnover. Always before turnovers, there's always a play that happens that ends up resulting in the turnover. It's never the turnover that's
right. The
worst play.
Yep.
It's always the play before, and I think that was clear indication, and Williams struggled to do that. Look, I think the Cowboys have struggled to be creative offensively. Last week against Jacksonville, you know, Dak Prescott was running a little bit more of the Mississippi State style of offense. I think that's what he needs to do. But this front for Washington's big. They're physical. They're hard to move around. You've got to beat them in the passing game. I'm just not sure the Cowboys have the design or the scheme to do that.
Let's go to Jacksonville, where today Doug Marrone announced that Blake Bortles will, in fact, start this weekend in London. They restructured his contract at the end of last year, so they're on the hook to like $19 million next year. What do you do if you're running the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, they've been living a lie. I mean, they've been living it for a long time. If I was running the Jacksonville Jaguars, we probably Deshaun Watson would have been on the team, because there's no way I would have drafted the running back, Leonard Fournette, and passed up the quarterback. Now, I would have looked silly, perhaps, because Mahomes is obviously a great player, but that's what I would have done. And I just don't understand Tom Coughlin's keep insisting on thinking that Blake Bortles. I get David Caldwell, the general manager. He drafted Bortles. He's entitled. He's living what I call the endowment effect. He can't get off of it because he drafted him. So he's just going to keep perpetuating the myth. I mean, when you give this guy $54 million and you put him back in your locker room, what you're saying to your locker room is he's your guy. And everyone in that locker room knows that's not true. Everyone in the locker room knows he's not worth $54 million. Everyone knows he can't win the game for him. Everyone knows they're managing the team around him. And when that happens, that's why they had chaos in their locker room yesterday. This is a mess that Jacksonville's front office has created, because they won't be honest with themselves and say, we need a quarterback. And really, what choice did Doug Marrone have? Is he going to pay Cody Kessler? You watched Cody Kessler play at USC. Hugh Jackson said, trust him on this. He knows quarterbacks. Really? Okay, great, Hugh. Third-round pick, Cody Kessler. Most teams had him as a free agent. Hugh drafted him in the third round. There's where that went. They traded him to Jacksonville. You're not going to start Cody Kessler in a game. You've got no choice. So whenever you want to live a lie, your backup, you make sure you don't have a backup behind him that could actually take his job, because you don't want competition. You want the guy to be a player.
What about the Browns? Hugh says, now I'm going to take more command of the offense. How does that work out?
What's Hugh doing Monday through Saturday? I mean, seriously, what does Hugh do Monday through Saturday? I like to know his daily agenda. Okay, so he's not calling the offensive plays, he doesn't run the defense, and he doesn't run the special teams. What is his day like Monday through Saturday? Like, if you're an offensive coach, don't you walk into the staff meeting and say, Todd, look, we're playing Tampa, I want to go after Brett Grimes, I want to double move him, I want to create some packages for Nick Chubb when he's in deep eye formations, I want to be able to protect our left tackle because he's really struggling. Don't you do that? Isn't that what a head coach should do? Right?
One would think.
Right, but every Monday after a loss, Hugh reminds us he's the head coach, but Monday through Saturday, he never acts like one.
What do you do if you're the Giants? I know tonight in Atlanta against a banged-up Atlanta team, but it feels like Eli's close to losing the locker room if he hasn't already. What do you do?
If Eli does not play well against one of the worst defenses I've seen on tape all season, then I don't know what to say. I think what's the best thing for Eli fans are, he'll probably play well tonight, and everybody will be happy. The back page of the New York papers will say, Eli's back, everything's great, don't worry. And then when he plays against a real defense, we'll start worrying again.
Patrick Peterson says he wants to trade. His coach says they're not trading him. They're terrible right now. They do have some good pieces, but a terrible roster. How does that? What's a value for a guy like Patrick Peterson?
look, if I'm the GM of the Arizona Cardinals, I'm not trading. I'm going to Patrick Peterson and saying, look, you're the solution. You're not the problem. And I would say, look, I messed this up. This is not a very good team. It's on me. I got to fix it, but I need you. I need you on the team. I need David Johnson. I need Chandler Jones. I need these guys. You know, I made the mistakes. I let Calais Campbell walk out of here. I made some bad decisions in who I've drafted and what's going on, and especially with both offensive and defensive lines. Just give me a year to fix it. I need you on the team. That's what I'd be saying.
Is Andrew Luck coming into being what he was? Is he getting back to the path he was before he got hurt?
You know, Doug, he's led the league in third down passing all season. It's been kind of a mythology that he's not really playing well. He's always been a quarterback who's thrown interceptions. I mean, when I first was in, when I was in Cleveland and in New England, I had a reel of all of Andrew Luck's interceptions that were dropped, and it was fairly extensive. He takes chances with the ball. That's who Andrew Luck is. He's not a ball protector, but he's a playmaker, and he's done that, and I think he's done a good job getting his arm back. I think Frank Reich's done a very good job without a lot of pieces on offense to make this offense move, and I think that's what you're seeing. But they've been very effective on third down. They've controlled the football, had a lot of injuries, and I think they're bouncing back. I mean, that was an easy game against Buffalo because we know this about Buffalo. Buffalo is not capable of winning a game. Buffalo needs the opponent to lose the game.
The Chargers are one of those teams that tease you and tantalize you. And look, I know they don't have Hunter Henry. They won't have him for this year. Maybe they get in playoffs. They haven't had Joey Bosa yet. But, I don't know, yesterday seemed to be a little bit different for the Chargers. They found a way to win a game that normally that they lose. Is it possible they've turned this thing around from being the team that teases you and loses games they should win?
You know, that was a game I thought the Titans had control of the game the entire game, even though they were down. I thought they were in control of the game. I think Mike Vrabel made a mistake in going for two. He acted as a desperate coach. Here's what I didn't understand, Doug. His red zone offense all day was horrible. He was 2-for-5 in the red zone. And he put the game on the line with your red zone offense. Why would you do that?
I don't know. The Chargers were on defense for 36 minutes. Keep playing, get the ball in overtime, and the Chargers will let you score.
Yeah, exactly. The Chargers were worn out. You have 24 first downs to them. I mean, you're playing really good. You gave them the ball back when it was 21 or 20-13. You gave them the ball back 20-13, and I said to myself, if the Chargers are a real team, they take the ball down and score, like New Orleans did against Baltimore right at the end of the game. New Orleans went right down there. They scored a touchdown. They made it a 7-point difference. That's the team. They scored a field goal. That's the team that you have to be. And what the Chargers did was they went 3-and-out naturally, and here comes Tennessee down. I thought it was a horrible decision. I think the Chargers were primed to lose that game just like Charger-like. Only thing that happened was I think Mike Vrabel gave them one.
Yeah, I tend to completely agree with you. Michael Lombardi joining us. His new book is called Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the National Football League. Philadelphia Eagles lose at home, hard-fought game, kind of a mess of a game. It felt like they were on the right track, and then a step back yesterday. They normally don't lose at home. How do they fix things in Philly?
Well, this is the second loss at home, Doug. So the problem in Philadelphia is real simple, third down. Last year they were very good on third down, especially in the red zone. Last year they were 51% converting the four-point plays, I call them, third down red zone plays. So far this season, they've only converted four. They're 21%. They're 31st ranked team in that area. And they only got one first down the entire day in the fourth quarter on third down. So they didn't control the ball in the fourth quarter when they needed to do it. And I think, you know, this is what happens to them. They're not scoring the points they need to. They're not putting teams away like they could last year. Their defensive line is still very effective, but they can't cover in the back end. So people can make plays, and the longer the game goes. Look, the Eagles had the ball 36 minutes in that game, and they couldn't put them away in the fourth quarter. And that's what really cost them. They're sloppy at times on offense. Carson Wentz has taken a lot of hits. And then he didn't make very good decisions at the end of the game. He's got a guy wide open in a flat for the first down, doesn't take it, tries to throw an interception in the end zone, doesn't get caught, tries to throw another interception in the end zone, doesn't get caught, and then has two passes that get tipped at the line. So it's I think they've got to go back. I think what Doug Peterson said yesterday really is hilarious because he's trying to go back to 2017 when he was the guy standing in front of his team saying, you know what, fellas? Nobody respects us. Nobody thinks we're any good. We got to play to it. He's the Super Bowl champ. Everybody's coming to get him.
Mitchell Trubisky really struggled in the first half. Did some nice things to lead him on a comeback in the second half. Of course, his Hail Mary came up literally a yard short. But you look at the Bears, and granted, there weren't huge expectations, but anybody who's good they've lost to and the bottom teams that they've beaten, what's your stance on Trubisky now watching Pat Mahomes light up the league, a guy that they traded up to get instead of Mahomes?
I watched that tape. I just finished watching that tape. I was not impressed with Mahomes. I was not impressed with Trubisky in that tape at all. Missed a lot of throws. He made plays with his feet, was bad in the first half, missed a lot of receivers, couldn't control the football at all with his arm, could not control it. The second half, he got a lot of yards at the end of the first half on junk yards. The Patriots gave it to him. And then he got a lot of yards when it was 38 to 24. And they started moving the ball at that point. The Patriots were really, their opponent was the clock. And then, of course, the Hail Mary. But all he did was run around. And I think what you've seen from Trubisky so far this year is exactly why, you know, he didn't play at North Carolina. He's more of a runner than he is a quarterback. He's not instinctive at the position, and he's not accurate with the football. And I think the Bears defensively got exposed yesterday. Their secondary got attacked. The Patriots moved the ball up and down the field on them. I would be nervous. I think the Bears are a 500 team. I think they'll beat the bad teams. I don't think they'll beat the good teams.
The good thing is that they got two of the bad teams upcoming, the Jets and the Bills, and maybe that artificially inflates their record, but I have a tendency to agree with you because you know a ton more about football than I do, frankly. Michael Lombardi. Great stuff, Michael, as always. Again,
Thank you, Doug.
The book is Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. It's on sale now.